It's Friday, December 21st, 2012, and we are still all here. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today on RBN, whose website is republicbroadcasting.org. My website is spingola.com. During the program, email your questions or comments to Spingola1 at yahoo.com. Join others in the Spingola chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to spingola.chatango.com. Several people have emailed me regarding the absence of Veronica Clark's website and YouTube channel. She is no longer in a position to maintain that particular website, but is still publishing. YouTube began sending her messages regarding, and I quote, hate and copyright infringements, unquote, which reflects its association with the ADL, which began on December of 2008. She does have another alternative video channel, which I have posted on my specials page on my website. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Dr. Harold Rome. He is the author of From the Temple to the Talmud, which is published by the Barnes Review, and it came out the end of 2011. Welcome to the program, Dr. Rome.
Thank you, Diana. I'm very pleased to be on the program again, and I might just say briefly that if they're interested in my book, check it out on barnesreview.org or under my name on amazon.com. My name is spelled R-H-O-M-E. So if you're interested in the book, check it out, please.
All righty. Thank you. You also write articles for GnosticLiberationFront.com, and a recent article that you wrote and is actually part of your book is called, it's Chapter 8, The Khazarian Connection, The Search for Ashkenazi Origins, and it talks about Arthur Koestler and the 13th Tribe, and there are a lot of other books that that talk about the same thing. One other thing that I particularly enjoyed having from you, which I received, oh, gosh, maybe 3 or 4 years ago or longer, is something called A Few Minutes Before Midnight. And it was a 2008 e-book, and it is an analysis of Hitler's April 1939 speech that could have prevented World War II. You've also done some other e-books, which you did Blood Ritual, an investigative report examining a certain series of cultic murder cases. You also did Blood Ritual, Revisited in 2010, Deconstructing 6 Million Holomyths in 2008, and then the book we've already mentioned, From the Temple to the Talmud, Exploring Judaic Origins, History, Folklore, and Tribal Traditions, came out in 2011, Lifting the Veil, an Exploration of Islam in 2012, The Occult War, Exploring the Hidden Components of History and Current Events, also in 2012, and Voodoo, A True Crime Exposé in 2009, and William Dudley Pelley, America's Forgotten Mystic in 2011. So you've been quite busy in the last few years.
Well, I appreciate you mentioning all those titles. I don't want to overwhelm everybody. The two parts that you mentioned, the one about deconstructing 6 Million Holomyths and the one about Chancellor Hitler's speech in 1939, those will be in an e-book I have coming out that I will tell you about after the break.
All righty, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Dr. Harold Rome. He is the author of several books, including From the Temple to the Talmud, published by the Barnes Review, which is a journal that I subscribe to and really appreciate. Their website is barnesreview.org. All righty. So you have been very busy, have been doing a lot of research.
Yes, I appreciate mentioning all the titles and the ones you mentioned about deconstructing 6 Million Holomyths, and also the one which I really wish more people would be able to see about Adolf Hitler's 1939 speech, where he really worked very, very hard to avoid war. Nobody wants to hear that, seemingly. But I've taken both those units, and I am putting together a new book which will focus on National Socialism, some of the aspects about it that we don't really hear about very much. It will be called Opening the Memory Hole. And people can email me. I will say my email address, and I'll spell it quickly. Eagle Revisionist, that's EagleReVisionist, Eagle Revisionist at AOL.com. And I can tell you how you can get some of these e-books if you want them. So thank you for the time to say that.
Right, and you can just email those e-books to people, and which is the way that I have received mine, I believe. It's been a while, but I think that's the way we did it. And I really do like PDF files because, well, I don't know. They're just, if I had all of the PDF files as actual books, it would be overwhelming. I already have a lot of hard copy books and a lot of bookcases and things, but if I had all the PDF files, and you know, it would be tremendous. I would have to build onto the house.
Yeah, I'm sitting in my library now where I have over 2,000 hard copy books, and PDF files are great. They're easy to send by email, as you pointed out. Everyone on internet has Adobe Reader and all of that, so they're so very easy to use. And you can have hundreds of e-books, and they don't take up any room at all. I love the hard copy books, of course. Like I say, I'm sitting here amongst them all right now. But in a lot of ways, they're not as convenient as getting something, PDF file, opening it right up, looking for what you want in it, reading it, doing what you need to do.
Right. And I also like the fact that you can copy-paste things out of them and use quotes, and it's just handy. It's really handy.
Very much so. Absolutely.
I was listening to a recent, I believe it was in July of this year, you did an interview with Clayton Douglas.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I listened to that this morning. Usually in the morning I look at a lot of videos relative to the guests that I'm going to have on, or I listen to audio files just so I can kind of get an idea of what you've been saying.
That's usually a good idea, I think.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And anyway, I found that very interesting. I was also listening to one this morning with Stu Webb and Gordon Duff, and that was on NSearch, and it was 3 hours, so I didn't get through all of it. But oh my, what a lot of contradictory statements in that that audio. But we won't go into that. I think I like to stick with the truth and with actual facts. And so what would you like to talk about? We talked earlier about, well, some of the books that you've been looking at, the Serrano books, Miguel Serrano books.
Yes, Serrano's books now, as you know, are translated into English, which is very, very helpful for people who want to read some rather interesting things about the esoteric dimensions of National Socialist movement.
Right.
And Serrano is a very, very interesting character on that. He was a Chilean diplomat. He served all over the world, including 8 or 9 years in India, where he met the current Dalai Lama when the Dalai Lama was very young. And they became friends and confidants to one another.
Right. Yes. Now, of course, we realize that National Socialism was an alternative to capitalism and communism, which were both developed by the same tribe and for the same purpose. One was more violent and immediate, where the other one was just sort of like Trotsky would have wanted, subtle, and you just kind of come in and infiltrate everything and take over without overtly killing a lot of people. Now, we know that you still can kill a lot of people, but you do it in more subtle ways. You don't do it with guns and a lot of violence. And I think it's probably much easier to enter through the gates of capitalism and kind of give everyone the idea that they can be as wealthy and as successful as the other people they see in society. And so they try, but basically policies, both practices, both parties do the same thing. They exploit the labor of other people and take the profits, take the results of other people's labor to themselves without having to do a lot of work themselves.
Yes, you are so correct about that, and particularly pointing out that capitalism operates on a fantasy, a dream world. They want you to see the millionaires of the world and believe that you too can be like that, when only in reality a very, very, very small group of people ever achieve anything remotely like that.
Right.
And National Socialism definitely was, well, they call it the third position. It was neither capitalism nor communism. It was a different way, and we look back at what happened after the National Socialist Party was elected in Germany and when Chancellor Hitler took office in 1933, that they created an economic system that liberated Germany from both capitalism and communism. Yet no one seems to want to talk anything about that in this day and time.
Although I believe that there's a lot more people that are talking about that, because the truth is bound to get out once it finds a little bit of an exit. And people like you have created this opportunity where others feel very, very comfortable talking about it, although I must admit that sometimes there are some negative consequences. I've been called many names because I have talked about these things. But that is what people do. They vilify the messenger. They try to destroy the messenger because they cannot argue with the message. And I believe that that the messages that you bring to your books are very solid. And there's so many other people who are designing websites, Wayne from Canada for one. I mentioned Veronica Clark this morning. Her work and her scholarship is just irrefutable. Then you have people like Carolyn Yeager, who is tremendous in pointing out the myths of the Holocaust, particularly with her book. Although it is not lengthy, it is jam-packed with facts and pictures. And her scholarship is also top quality. And so with so many people coming out, and I won't go on to name all of them because this is just a two-hour program, but with so many people coming out with the truth, then it's bound to make an impact. The unfortunate thing is that so many people do not read, and they accept the myths without ever looking into the actual books or the science or the documentation. They don't go to the archives, and they just simply repeat sound bites that they've heard on TV or in the government school system, which has done a really good job of brainwashing an entire population to accept things that are simply not true.
Oh, that's very, very true about the school system. I don't have any school-age children anymore, but if I did, I would feel morally compelled to do some kind of homeschooling with them and not let them go to public schools.
Indeed, I agree with you completely. And we've certainly talked a little bit on this program about homeschooling and the benefits. It isn't just a matter of teaching them at home so that they do have proper information, but it's allowing them to learn how to think rather than what to think. And that's something that they do not learn how to do at school, because it's kind of the herd mentality, where everybody has to believe the same thing. And if you don't, if you stand out, then somehow you just don't fit in. And of course, people in a herd mentality, culture, don't want to be out in the cold. They don't want to think outside of the box or be apart from their fellows. We are going to a quick 3-minute break, after which we will come back with our guest today, Dr. Harold Rome. Be right back. Welcome back, Deanna. And our guest today is Dr. Harold Rome, and that's H-A-R-R-E-L-L. Last name is R-H-O-M-E, and he is the author of many books, and he writes for GnosticLiberationFront.com, and his books, the most recent one, or I guess I can't say that because you have some coming in, or that came out in 2012, From the Temple to the Talmud, is published by the Barnes Review. I mentioned Gordon Duff, which brought me to think about something that was on Veterans Today, which he is chief editor for. It was called Zionist Financed Hitler's Regime and Condemned Jews to the Holocaust. And this was a review of Edwin Black's book. Now, they made a statement, it was actually something that they implied in the title of their article, Zionist Financed Hitler's Regime, but they used Edwin Black and his book, which is called The Transfer Agreement, as their source for something that they were trying to imply in the title of their work. Now, I have his books, because I believe in being objective. I believe in looking at both sides of things. And I did not find the statement that the reviewer implied in the title. So I always go to the source. I emailed Edwin Black, and I never imagined that I would hear back from him, as I got an automatic auto response saying that he was currently answering questions from October 2010. So I didn't figure I'd hear back from him. And I did this probably a month ago. And when this article, it was actually published in 2011, but it was republished just recently. And so I got an auto response, and I figured he wouldn't respond. And so I asked him, let me tell you what I said. I said, I have all your books. I'm trying to find in the transfer agreement a statement that someone claimed that you made in that book, that, and I quote, wealthy Jews financed Hitler, unquote. Presumably that they initially put him into power. Did you write that or simply imply that because of the collaboration between the Zionists and the Hitler government that the wealthy Jews in New York facilitated the desired deportation of the Jews from Germany? And he wrote back and he said, Dear Deanna, thank you for your question. The transfer agreement was a bold and dramatic rescue of some Jews. Now, keep in mind, there's a bias here. Was a bold and dramatic rescue of some Jews with a pittance of their possessions, which is a falsehood, because there is an entire community of ill-informed Holocaust deniers and those who invent bizarre theories about Jewish finance. The content of my book is often distorted and or fabricated. In the instance you mention, not only did I never mention or write those words, the concept is completely contrary to the facts. The Hitler regime did not need Jewish financiers since it embarked, and this is where the falsehood comes in, upon a legal campaign of confiscation, pauperization, Aryanization, and organized pilfering of all Jewish possessions in Germany. Those who say otherwise are fundamentally out of touch with reality. That said, I thank you for reaching out to me and asking your question. I appreciate your continued support. Of course, I didn't tell him that I was a Holocaust denier in my initial email.
I think he probably knew that, but I thought it was very interesting that he answered you. I haven't read his whole book, but I read some of it, and I quoted from it. Basically, a very short thing he said is commercial recovery was Adolf Hitler's prime mission when he came to power in January 1933. The greatest obstacles to recovery were political instability and bizarre economic policy. I'm glad that you got that straight with him, and I'm delighted that he answered you. I think that's speaks very well for him.
I do too. I think that I believe in approaching. If you're gonna ask a question of somebody, go to the source. And when a website such as Veterans Today has an article there that is entitled "Zionist Financed Hitler's Regime," they darn well better have some proof. And if they're going to quote from somebody, you better hope that nobody's going to go to the author and say, "Hey, did you say this?" Because it's just going to make them, it's just going to affect their credibility or the writer's credibility. So,
Veterans Today has some good things to say, but they also have faults, as you have very clearly pointed out.
Right, and I think that people have to be knowledgeable enough and have to do independent research and look at both sides of issues, and then they can draw their own conclusions. We cannot, under any circumstances, simply accept what we are told in sound bites and then repeat it as if it were gospel truth.
Yeah, the Zionists seem to really like for people to get out on the radio and say all these negative things. We'll say more about this.
Right. We will be right back. You are well trained, Doctor. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Dr. Harold Rome, author of many books. Alrighty, we were talking about what were we talking about? I do a little bit of reading in between during the break, and so I think, okay, what were we talking about?
Well, we're talking about Edwin Black, but other things. Most of the time when anything like you and I are discussing now is brought up, we are called, as I call it, the double N-word. We're called neo-Nazis, and that's supposed to be a very terrible thing to call us. We're supposed to dread that and avoid it. And I think the Veterans Today and other certain other radio broadcasters very much like to say very, very negative things. Anything about National Socialism is negative. Anything about Hitler is negative. And they seem to be very adept at putting this into their various broadcasts. But I'm glad that we can talk about it freely here. And when you look at what happened in Germany back in the 1930s, we see an economic miracle occurred in a time of a horrible worldwide depression. And Germany was basically the only country that was really coming out of it fully at all. And once you realize this, it shows us that some of these economic policies could be a model for us today. We're at another time in history when we're economic challenges are all over the world, all around us, and people are looking for solutions, to be sure.
Right. And he certainly kicked the bankers out of the country, rejected the loans. In fact, he was told they didn't have any gold in 1933. They didn't have any gold. But the minute that he came in at the end of January 1933, and by April, the international bankers were declaring a boycott against anything that was produced in Germany. And at this very, very same time, some of the people in the Roosevelt administration were also beginning to wage an economic war against Japan. And there's a book written just about that. I don't have it in front of me. It's on my Kindle, but on my iPad. But I've been reading that and kind of comparing the notes that from that book with what happened in Germany, that we recognize that Germany was not an isolated event, and the same people in the Roosevelt administration, although we think about a Jewish boycott, but it was certainly supported by Roosevelt. And when you think that the Roosevelt administration had 73 Jewish people in as advisors, as part of the administration, and that they were plotting against Japan and Germany at the very same time, for the same reason, to create a war, or I should say the continuation of World War I.
That's exactly what it was, the continuation of World War I. It was the same program. And the Roosevelt administration basically did all it could do to get us involved in Europe, both World War I and World War II, in my opinion, were European, Eurasian affairs, in which the United States really had no business. We would have done much, much better to have let Germany and Russia, the Soviet Union, go ahead and clash with one another. Hitler would have most likely won that, would have destroyed communism, would have saved 40, 50 million lives, depends on what figures you follow, in Russia itself. And communism would never have gone to Asia and would have saved another 30 or 40 million lives in China. And today, most people don't want to hear about those things. They don't realize that a lot of the Roosevelt administration policies directly set the stage for Japan attacking us at Pearl Harbor. And if you want to look very closely, you will see, before studying all that much, that we knew that the attack was coming. We said nothing about it. We wanted it to happen.
Well, we didn't.
Not only did we declare war on Japan, we declared war on Germany and Italy, who had never done a thing to us.
I hate to say we, because I
I like you to say that. Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. Please correct me.
We didn't do this. They did this. They set this all up. And yet they say, oh, Hitler started the war. And we have broadcasters who continually bring up the Gleiwitz incident, and they talk about the Reichstag fire. And honestly, 4 or 5 years ago, I was probably one of them. I have altered a few of my articles that I wrote years back, beginning in 2005, because after you have been researching for a while, if you're really looking for the truth, you're going to find it. And people who have been in the so-called truth movement for years or decades and they haven't found the truth yet, just aren't looking hard enough, or they're denying it, or they're agent provocateurs.
Oh, I like you to say that. Yes, are agents provocateurs, which many of them really are. I'm not going to name any particular broadcasters, but certain ones stand out as they can't go 20 minutes on a broadcast without saying something ugly about the German people or calling someone a Nazi or comparing someone to the horrible Hitler.
Right. And all they're doing is showing their lack of intellectual integrity.
They're showing that, and they may be showing who's really backing them as well.
Indeed. Indeed. So, anyway, this the first piece that drew my attention to you was a few minutes before midnight, and I studied that document. It's, what is it, like 45 pages or something? Let me just bring it up here.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's 139 pages, but the meat of it is in 40 pages. And then you have some commentary and whatnot. And how did you come to find this? It's a 137 page ebook, and it was in the German language, and now we have it in English. So could you talk to us about this and how you came to have this and offer it?
Well, a friend of mine, went to a garage sale and found a small little booklet that was the Hitler speech in English, translated from the German. And I was able to take that and turn it into a Microsoft Word file. And using all of that, by the way, I have all the original copies of the little booklet. If anybody wants to see it, they can email me and ask for it. But, yes.
Wasn't it widely spread, disseminated in the United States at the time that it was made? And
yes,
it was also on the radio.
Yes, it was. And the speech, apparently the little booklet that I came across was published by the German Information Service, which is part of the German consulate in New York City at that time. And I assume that the speech was translated into other languages and sent to other places in the world. I've tried to find other people who might have copies of it, but the English language one, again with the German in the back of it, is the only one I've come across. And it's a great speech. And like I say, if anyone wants to see that, I can send them either just that part of the book by itself, if they want to see that. I'm hoping that eventually, I hope that Barnes Review would publish it, but it's rather long, so that may be blocking it being in a regular publication, newspaper or magazine. It's rather long, but I have it, like I say, if you want it, I've got it in a PDF version. I've got it in the Microsoft Word version. Just ask. I will send it.
Yes, I think it's very important, and we haven't really talked about Churchill, but Churchill was certainly preparing for war as early. Well, he was preparing for war before World War I, and he and Roosevelt had the same position in their respective governments at the same time, and so they were both. In on World War I, and then of course they teamed up later on in the early 30s to start preparing for war against Germany in the early 30s, including building up armaments and all kinds of things. And Hitler often said that National Socialism was designed for Germany. It wasn't something that they were trying to export. Certainly was not trying to take over the world, and that's another myth that people readily spread around, and it is not true. If you look at a lot of the Jewish writings, you'll discover that they are the ones, particularly Bernard Baruch, who were looking for a one-world government, which they still are.
Oh, they definitely are, yes. Globalism, one-world government, that is the goal of the Zionists. That always has been their goal, to do away with national governments, national economies, and go to a worldwide form, absolutely.
Right, and this isn't just an economic thing, but it's also multiculturalism. And when you look at things, when you think, okay, they had to have a lot of economic power in order to demand a boycott, a worldwide boycott on Germany. What kind of that? That's a lot of power.
A lot of power, absolutely.
And it wasn't just America; it was Britain. It was worldwide, and people all over the world. Traders all over the world, and of course the Jews are very famous as the traditional traders, the people with the money lenders and the people that sold the cloth and all the rest. And so they had already established these economic networks long before, well, as early as 1600. That's as far back as I go with it. But they had these networks already established. And so for them to say that, Hitler, somebody that took 14 years to get into government power, was all of a sudden going to have a world government is ludicrous. And people who believe that and spread that kind of stuff, as I say, just lack integrity and certainly have not done their homework.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I'm looking here in that article that we're talking about that there were several newspapers that published it. And the headline is, of course, Judea declares war on Germany, where that the Zionist, worldwide Zionist movement called for an economic war to boycott German goods, to boycott any kind of investments in Germany, anything like that.
Right.
And it was indeed an economic declaration of war.
Right. And they were established as a people, as early as 1843, they start, before the so-called civil war in this country, they set up a communications network where they could talk with each other on a daily basis, just about. And so they had the network set up, the communication network, which is essential to create the kind of economic boycott that they were striving for. And were very successful. And keep in mind that at the time of this economic boycott, 1933, that was at the height of the worldwide depression, which was caused by the bankers in 1929 with the economic crash, that Germany, just out of a war, and with the Versailles Treaty and all of the reparations that they were that were demanded of them, you had the Weimar Republic, which just inflated the currency so that it took wheelbarrows full of cash to buy a loaf of bread. That was the last thing, the very last thing that would have destroyed Germany had they been successful, and they were,
yes,
to a point.
Interesting, I have a small currency collection, and in there I have, I think it's a 5 million mark note and a 10 million mark note that was printed back in the Weimar Republic days, and that, yes, hundreds of them to buy even a small loaf of bread.
Right.
Are we nearing the same situation? I don't know. We might be.
I think so. If you, we're certainly, well, We have been the target of an economic war since after World War II. It has increased with all of your trade agreements, with the establishment of the World Trade Organization, with the establishment of so-called free trade. That really is part of the economic warfare that they have designed for us. And when you have so many people who are jobless, who have lost their homes, who are just living on hardly anything, or living in their car, living under the bridges, living in tents that we never hear about, we have the same kind of thing going on now. And we've always had economic crises, but the one that we've suffered with the big transference of money in 2008 and before, it's a horrible thing.
It is, and like you say, the so-called homeless people, many of them are people who simply cannot find a job or have lost their job and have run out of the unemployment insurance and all of that. We're supposed to be the wealthiest and the greatest country in the world, yet we have people living in their cars, like you point out, and living out on the street. This shouldn't be, but we are in a very bad position, very similar to what, again, as you've said, what was going on in Germany back in early 30s.
Right. And so, of course, with the fall of the mark We're going to a break. We will be right back with our guest today, Dr. Harold Rome, after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Dr. Harold Rome. He's written several books, and he also writes for GnosticLiberationFront.com. And we have a lot of very brilliant people in our chat room, and I really appreciate them when they copy-paste some things into the chat room, and one of them copied something that Samuel Untermeyer said in a radio broadcast on August 6, 1933, in New York. He said, and I quote, "Each of you, Jew and Gentile alike, who has not already enlisted in this sacred war should do so now and here. It is not sufficient that you should buy no goods made in Germany. You must refuse to deal with any merchant or shopkeeper who sells any German-made goods or who patronizes German ships or shipping. We will undermine the Hitler regime and bring the German people to their senses by destroying their export trade on which their very existence depends," unquote. Okay, so this is kind of a deadly threat, okay? They're starving. There are still people starving because of the Depression, because of the inflation. People are still starving in Germany. And so what this boycott does is it threatens their very existence, and they know it. Samuel Untermeyer knew that, and so this was a threat. And so that is when they opened the first camp. And remember that there were a lot of communists running around at this time, attempting to take over Germany as they had Russia, and there were people fighting this during the 20s. And a lot of people were killed. A lot of people in the National Socialist Movement were killed by the communists in the streets.
Yeah, we kind of forget about that. A lot of politics back then, particularly in the late 20s, early 30s, was very violent. And they had street demonstrations. They opposed one another, beat one another, shot one another, did all kind of terrible things. And one group had to defend themselves against another, and that was a great quote by Samuel Untermeyer. It was a war on Germany and the German people, and yes, people were still starving, and they wanted to destroy whatever Adolf Hitler and the National Socialist Party was trying to do because they saw it was going to work and bring Germany out of the Depression, which it certainly did.
Indeed. And he put a lot of people back to work, and they didn't like that. They didn't like that one little bit.
No, they did not like that. Not at all. Not at all. They were very hostile toward that. Judea declares war on Germany. That's indeed exactly what it was. It was as much a war as any kind of shooting war.
Right. And it's very interesting that in the early 30s, from 1933 moving forward, that there were a lot of Jews in Germany. There was no pogroms against them, but alternatively, in Poland, there was a lot of anger in Poland because of the we're going to our 60-second top of the hour break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. This is Deanna Spingola, and our guest today is Dr. Harold Rome. That's R-H-O-M-E. He is the author of many books, including From the Temple to the Talmud, published by the Barnes Review. Their website is barnesreview.org. He also writes articles for GnosticLiberationFront.com. And just a quick word, we will not be broadcasting live on Monday or Tuesday. So I hope that you will miss us, and we certainly will all miss you. But hopefully we'll all have a nice holiday, a nice Christmas. Alrighty, we were talking about Poland and some of the situation in Poland. There were at least 70,000 Jews that were living in Poland that were that were being subjected to a lot of persecution by the official policies of the Polish government. So at least 70,000 of these Jews decided to flee to Germany because they felt, and this was after 1935, they felt that life in Germany under the Nuremberg laws and under Hitler was more tolerable than life in Poland. And because there were no pogroms in Germany, there was no official policy of persecution. The lies that we've been told about the persecution was basically projection. Some of the people that were being persecuted in this country, we had persecution against the blacks in this country, where people were being lynched and all kinds of terrible things. And yet we hear all these stories, which simply were not true. Are you there?
Yes, and we also forget that when Germany and Poland clashed with one another, that Poland was not a quote-unquote democracy at all. It was a military dictatorship ruled by several generals, and this is what the German government was up against. You hear lots of things over the years that, oh, Germany attacked Poland without any cause, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that was really not true at all. And the Zionists were very, very active in Poland, creating pressure on Germany and on the Jews of Poland as well.
Right.
Yes, go ahead, please.
10% of the Polish population was composed of Jews, where in other countries you'll find that it's 1 or 2%. But 10% of the population, and most of them lived in urban areas rather than in rural areas, particularly in Warsaw. They did have a large Zionist movement there and recruited people in Warsaw. In fact, their main office for recruitment of people to go to Palestine was in Warsaw. There was also one in Berlin, and they were trying to get people to go to Palestine. And we often hear the myth that, oh, well, it was Hitler that created Israel. Well, that's a bunch of poppycock, because the Zionist movement started in the 1880s. And it certainly was facilitated by the Balfour Declaration, which was through the British. So you had the Zionist movement was well underway before Hitler ever came to power in 1933. The movements in both Warsaw and, well, particularly in Warsaw, they wanted to get these Jews out of the country. There were several places that were mentioned as places to have them go. We do have to take a real quick break. We will take your phone calls after we come back from the break at 800-313-9443. Our guest today is Dr. Harold Rome, author of many, many books, and including From the Temple to the Talmud. And we do have some callers lining up. What do you think? Should we take some callers?
Sounds great. Yes, I'd love to hear from some of the listeners.
All righty. Let's take Alfred in Chicago. Hey, we're neighbors. Alfred, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ms. Spingola. Thank you for the greeting. I actually wanted to speak to you a little bit off the air, but I guess I'm here, it's fine. I'm calling because a listener of your show by the name of Jeffrey Joseph Black.
Yes.
His mother called me a few days ago to give me the bad news that he was murdered on October 26th in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
He was murdered?
Murder, yes. Whenever you get a chance, I'm going to send you an email with a request from his mother for some property of his.
I'm
sorry if I'm being coherent, but I'm just...
I had an external hard drive that that he delivered to me, and I sent that back to him several months ago. And he delivered it. I met him at the train station in Naperville with a friend of mine, and he wanted me to have this because he was afraid, and there was some information, and but I did not ever open it. I was unable to open any of the files on that external hard drive, and so I sent it back to him. Well, it's been several months.
All right. Then I guess that will send her an email, let her know that she has, or he has already in his possession, he had in his possession what he mentioned to his mother.
Yeah. And yeah, I sent that back. In fact, I have emails from him saying, thank you, I got the hard drive. And, I'll have to look in my email file and see when that occurred, but it's been several months that I sent that to him. And he wanted me, I asked him, I said, wouldn't you like to have this before you leave? Because he told me he was leaving. And he was unable to come out to the train station. I was unable to go to Chicago. And he said, could you just mail it to me after I get settled? And he told me that he was moving to Pittsburgh. And so when he was settled, he emailed me, and then I sent the hard drive.
All right. I'll let his mother know then.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well, that's very sad. I can't imagine anybody that would murder him. I'm sure that many of you remember that he used to call into RBN. He used to call into John's program, Jeffrey Joe Black, and he actually had a campaign against the current mayor, Rahm Emanuel, and I think he was very effective in pointing out that Rahm Emanuel was not actually, because he had not established residency here when he started running for mayor, and then they pulled some fast ones and got the people who rented the Emanuel's home to say, oh no, they left a bunch of boxes in the basement, and then they came back the next they said no, they didn't leave anything here at the home. They cleaned it out when they went to Washington. Then the next day they came back into court and said, oh yes, we found about 100 boxes in the basement. Dargon. But Jeffrey was basically the one that targeted him very publicly. Alrighty, we do have another caller. Let's take Werner in British Columbia. Werner, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good afternoon, Dan. You know something? I am delighted. You are the fiercest defender of the German people.
Well, I just think that the truth is really important.
Well, as I say, people don't learn their past, and they rely on the fabricated past. They are bound to repeat the same mistakes over and over again, and get sucked in by the same perpetrators.
Indeed, and there's so many books out. In fact, Lark in the chat room just asked me about this one book, The Mind and God of Adolf Hitler by Dr. Ron Joseph. And he said, Deanna, can you ask Dr. Rome about the author's conclusions about Hitler's supposed weirdness? And but anyway, let's talk about that after. What would you like to
Deanna, I've mentioned that several times before. People, if they want to know the real history, they have to go back to the original sources before any kind of a vested interest have a chance to put their own spin on. And one of the the original sources are now available on the internet, and those are the speeches Adolf Hitler gave during all the pivotal times in the 20s, 30s, and up to 1945. you know. And they're available on the internet. They're in German, but they got the English translation underneath. Hello?
I'm sorry. I muted myself to take a drink of water.
Sorry.
Yes, we absolutely have to go to the original sources, to the archives, to the original documents, and then draw our own conclusions. And certainly, in fact, one of our frequent guests, Clint Richardson, says he does not even read the books that many people read because they are often opinion, but he goes right to the main sources. So that is what you're suggesting that we do. What are your thoughts, Dr. Rome?
Well, I think so also that so many people, when it comes to Germany and World War II, the topic, they assume that they've been taught the truth and that Germany started the war and Hitler was a terrible person who tried to kill all the Jews. And when they hear anything to the opposite of that, in some ways they don't really know what to, I think a lot of people don't really know what to do with the information. They realize they can't go to work and talk about it, can't go to most churches and talk about it, if any churches at all. And they don't really know what to do with the information that they've gotten. So I think that's a problem, that the things that we're discussing are rather, how shall we say, politically very incorrect, and certainly the Democrats and the Republicans don't want to hear anything to do with what we're discussing.
And you mentioned early in the program about Veterans Today. You know, I think the veterans, they have to come clear and become honest. Who was it there who wrote a book there about years ago? War is a Racket? Racket?
Yes. General Butler.
Smedley Butler, yeah.
Yeah.
And, but it seems to, when even some of the hosts on RBN, they don't want to get kicked off their soapbox, that basically they have been used as pawns now for over 100 years to do the dirty work for the very same enemies of the people.
Well, you know, I think that that people just don't want to leave something that's comfortable. They don't want to lose friends. They don't want to be controversial. And so they repeat the myths. That they either believe them or have just not dug deep enough. And as I said, I repeated some of those same myths, but as soon as I found out that they weren't true, then I tried to take them back and start going in the direction of truth. And certainly when I talked about the Reichstag fire, I was just repeating what I had heard in the truth movement. And I believe that you're going to find more people in the so-called truth movement that are perpetuating these myths than you do on the outside, because that is where they infiltrate. They're certainly not going to try to infiltrate organizations that already promote this. They're going to infiltrate into the so-called truth movement, because people have a tendency to believe that if there's some sort of alternative media, that that's where you're going to find the alternative truth. And they will not believe all the other so-called government versions of everything. They don't believe 9/11, about the 9/11. They don't believe the Pearl Harbor myth. They don't believe a lot of things. They simply do not trust the government. And yet they readily accept the government's version of World War II. So they're just not, consistent in their trust and in their belief system. They're just, and it's too bad, because it's hurting the movement. And so.
But at least you have the courage when you recognize that you were repeating falsehood to make a 180-degree turnaround and admit it. But most of the people, they're living in a kind of a lucid dream, and they don't want to get woken up.
That's possible, yes. Alrighty, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back, and we'll take some more calls at 800-313-9443. Our guest today is Dr. Harold Rome. And, Werner, did you have some other questions or comments?
Well, I just want to say, you know, the same way as with the food, when there are too many toxic ingredients in the food, they will do us in. And it's the same way with the information. When there are too many toxic, when there is too much false information, it ultimately will do in people.
Indeed. That's a good analogy.
You know.
I like to hear that. We not only have toxic elements in thinking and what is called, presented to us as history, we have toxic elements in our foods. In a way, we are surrounded by toxic elements. I don't know how else to say it.
Well, the world is a dangerous place.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Indeed. All righty. Thank you so much, Werner, for your phone call.
Thank you.
Alrighty, let's take Shelly, and we do need to answer that question from the chat room about Dr. Ron, let's see, who, and you wrote about him, Dr. Ron Joseph. But let's take Shelly from Texas, and then I want you to answer that question.
Hello?
Shelly, yes, welcome.
Yes. Oh, hello, Deanna and Dr. Harold Rome, Christmas present. It's really good to hear you. I missed the first 20 minutes. Did you discuss at all William Dudley Pelly?
No? We mentioned...
Okay, I'll go back and listen. I'll go back and listen. If it was probably in the first 20 minutes then. But it's a pleasure to talk to you. And by the way, I agree with Werner on the toxic ingredients in food and history. I am so sick of it, and I have a whole list of criteria. I'm down to very, very, very few hosts in both RBN and now Oracle Broadcasting. I never listen to Orion except for Dr. Carly and Maggie on occasion, and they're gone. But my criteria, if they bash Hitler or Nazis or, you know, perpetrate myths, they're gone. And if they discuss 9/11 and do not mention the Israeli connection, they're gone. I have others, but those are two that come to mind. Let's see. The Pelly, Dr. Rome, I came across Pelly. Elmhurst, he wrote a book, The World Hoax, Jewish Role in Bolshevism, 1938. Somebody sent me that PDF. And
he wrote a lot of books. He was not. I had a good article about him, and I have the e-book. You need to email me. I'll just send that to you.
Is this written by Pelly or Elmhurst?
Yeah, William Dudley Pelly. Yeah, was just a remarkable man. He was put in prison during World War II by the Homeland Security of the day.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even when the war was over, he was not released until 1950, where apparently he promised to have nothing else to do with politics, and he became a very meaningful spiritual metaphysical teacher. And
amazing.
Over 50 books were published of his channeled writing.
Gosh. Now this is, okay, well, I came across because he wrote the introduction to this Elmhurst book, The World Hoax, and I was so impressed with his writing. I thought, who on earth is he? Looked him up, found your name, and that's about it. And I think you mentioned that almost all of his thousands of publications and newsletters, I mean, he wasn't like a Ford where he could, you know, stick them and distribute them in his automobiles, they were destroyed. Most of his publications, and I guess all of his books, because I can find just a few, right?
You need to look online a little bit more.
Okay.
American Book Exchange, avebooks.com, and others can, you can just run his name, and you can find, again, email me, and I will see if I can find. There used to be a company that was still, that had, that worked with his family after he passed away to keep the books in circulation. His daughter, I cannot remember her first name, but she died back in 2011, right before my other book was published, and she had kept all the copyrights in context and legal and all of that, and there are numbers of the books that are available, and if you are a spiritual, metaphysically minded person,
yes, always have been.
Oh, you'll want to find out much more about William Dudley Pelley. I won't bore you with more on the subject now, but like I say, he's a very interesting man. And
he
the
is.
More you find out about him, you will be totally intrigued. I am very, very sure.
Oh, well, thank you so, so very much. And Dan, I know you're running short. You've got callers and want to answer other questions. I'm just wondering if with this, I am every day I try and download for fear that the internet's going to be closed or, you know, books will vanish. And do you want me to finish? I hear the music.
Stay over the break and we'll pick it up on the other way. Okay. Be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. Today is Dr. Harold Rome, and Shelley, you had wanted to make some conclusions?
Oh, yeah. I'm just wondering if I'm so concerned about vanishing books, and, you know, we end up with this false narrative that people keep repeating. If you could think about maybe having a show on, like a Bookshare show, where we could call in and list, I have hundreds of PDFs on all kinds of topics, and even ancient Jewish history and Jewish encyclopedias and written by Jews. But it's like David Duke, you know, sometimes it's best to go to their source. They can't prove themselves wrong.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But maybe, you know, people could call in and say, I've got this, you know, to contribute and read off their lists, and then we could collect them under, you know, Spengola suggested real history or something like that. An original and trust original sources and trusted authors. Would you think that that might be a good way to save some of these books before they might vanish, or am I just being unusually paranoid?
Well, you could be unusually paranoid, but it's still a good idea.
Maybe not.
To get you, then you're not paranoid, right?
That's right. Oh, all righty. Well, thank you both so, so very much. And I can't wait, Dr. Rome, to read more about William Dudley Pelley. And I can't wait to purchase it from the Temple to the Talmud. Merry Christmas, both of you. And Chatters. If you're, I'm not there, but yeah, Merry Christmas to Chatters.
All righty.
Thanks.
Thank you so
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, could you address this issue? Well, we do have another caller. Let's take Liz, and then I want you to address the issue of Dr. Ron Joseph, who you mentioned in an article. But let's take Liz in the Ozarks first. Liz, welcome
Hello.
To the program.
I'll make this real quick. And it's funny that your last caller mentioned, because I'm calling in with an idea is exactly what she suggested. So you one time I mentioned the Barnes Review,
mm-hmm.
and you read from them. Well, I get their magazine now, and they just sent me all the books that they also sell. And it's right in your guest, if he wanted to contact them, it mentioned, you know, his books. Because they got everything from the Holocaust to the great books on Adolf Hitler from Hitler's Jewish soldiers and uncensored videos, and maybe the last caller, too, would like to check. But I also called the Barnes Review and suggested they come on your show.
Oh, that'd be a lovely idea.
So
I have a lot of their books and really appreciate what they do.
Yeah, they carry it from...
Yeah, when you look at the books that they have available, it is a very unique collection of books, and a lot of those books, titles you're simply not going to find anywhere else, and they're very available. They will ship to you very promptly and very efficiently.
Yeah, they're unbelievable. Always from that, from the Europeans to the American history. But if you maybe email them and invite them on your show. I talked to the girl for half an hour and said that Barnes Review and the Truth Radios like yours that deals in history need to come together and help support each other because it's a great magazine. And they were kind of keen on the idea, but maybe you could contact them, Deanna.
Sure.
I'd love to send their articles and have an editor come on and talk about how the Barnes Review started and all that great stuff.
All righty, that sounds like a really good idea, Liz. Thank you so much.
I'll look forward to hearing it. Your guest today is wonderful. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. All righty, tell us about Dr. Ron Joseph. Lark in the chat room asked about him.
Yeah, he's a very interesting character. Until I was doing research, I had never run across his writings before. He is a Jewish psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, and writer. And I included him in the article about deconstructing 6 million hollow myths because one thing I point out there is that the number, the 6 million number, the six is the Hebrew letter Vav, and that is a Kabbalistic magical number. So 6 million is a number that is, like a magic spell, and therefore it can never be changed. Ron Joseph liked the book Adolf Hitler, Begründer Israel, Adolf Hitler, Founder of Israel, maintains that not only was Hitler himself of Jewish descent, that many of the National Socialist leaders of early days were the same way. I don't believe that personally at all, but I do say that nonetheless we can conjecture that if this were actually true, then the so-called Holocaust might simply be seen as a tragically curious intra-Judaic affair. Interesting right. Idea, is it not?
Right. Well, that book opens up, the Bonder book opens up by having a picture of Hitler and then saying that he has all the characteristics of a Jew. So when a book opens up and you don't even get past the introduction and into the contents, and they're already spinning lies that have been disproven by several other really good researchers, then, you know, you really have to kind of figure, well, that book is probably just based on lies, and which you've indicated.
Well, I think it is, and I think that that's certainly a Zionist disinformation strategy that is being used. And again, both the books, Dr. Ron Joseph's books and the other one of Adolf Hitler, Founder of Israel, they're worth taking a look at, but I believe they're false. There's no way to really prove any of that beyond shadow of a doubt at all.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
Not a problem. If Hitler was Jewish, we would have heard a lot more about it before now. And I don't think there's any way of proving that. Not at all.
Well, there is a way to prove that he's not, is simply go back in the history and Carolyn Yeager has done that, and
she's
also Veronica Clark has done that. And when you look at the title itself, the founder of Hitler, founder of Israel, then that would mean that, well, for one thing, the Zionist movement started in 1880 or before, and then that would kind of make him responsible for all of the the deaths of the Palestinians, responsible for the loss of 500 towns, that the Jews, the terrorist Jews, Bergen came in and destroyed all of these towns, then you could just blame it on him. That would, you know, just, why don't we just blame everything in the world on him? Why don't we blame 9/11 on him? Why don't we blame Pearl Harbor on him? Why don't we just blame him for everything? And that is what they're trying to do, to so discredit him that people won't look underneath all of these lies and find out what he really did, is that he kicked the bankers out of Germany, and he created a system that was far better than capitalism, far better than communism, one that enhanced the lives of everybody in Germany. People were happy. He built an economic miracle, and that is what people do not want anybody to look at. And that is why you have all the distractions, and it serves a good purpose, because then people don't look beyond that. They don't look beyond the lies.
Yeah, a lot of people are afraid to see anything remotely positive about Hitler, as they'll be criticized by their co-workers, their friends, and certainly their churches.
Absolutely.
All the churches basically are pro-Zionist, pro-Israel. I'm sure that we'll get a call, somebody saying opposite of that, but that's the way I feel about it. You can't find any kind of Christian church that is not essentially pro-Israel.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, the churches, I believe, have been infiltrated, because that is how they operate. I mean, if you're going to take over the culture of a country, you've got to infiltrate the organizations, the agencies, the churches, everything where you can change culture, whether you're going to go to Hollywood and make films or infiltrate churches or get into the government. That's how you do it. Into the educational apparatus, communications.
You are absolutely right, and that's a good way to say it. That to take over a people, you have to take over their cultural entities, and certainly the main one of those are the churches and the schools. So if you dominate them, then you dominate the entire culture.
Exactly. Alrighty. We are taking calls at 800-313-9443. And let me check in the chat room and see if there's any interesting things in here. We have such a great group in the chat room. I just love those people. they are really wonderful.
You have a great group of listeners. Absolutely, you do.
Yes, we do. RBN has a very nice group of listeners, and I feel grateful that I am on RBN, and I don't feel that telling the truth has hurt me in the least, and I think that speaks well for RBN that I'm still here.
Absolutely.
Yep. Alrighty, so let's see. You wrote this book. Exploring the Occult Origins of Crucial Holocaust Dogma, which is part of the Deconstructing 6 Million Holomyths. And Lisa, who called in, Liz, who called in from the Ozarks, mentioned the Barnes Review, and I met some people from the Barnes Review back in 2007 and purchased a lot of books from them. I went to California for a conference and became acquainted with them and have bought things from them and subscribed right then. And I've never been sorry, and they are a great source of truth, and I think Michael Collins Piper also speaks very highly of him.
Yes, he does.
And he's a great truth teller, too. He's wonderful. And, of course, we know he's
all great, and he's, what he does on the radio is very, very good.
Love his books. I have all of his books.
I don't have them all, but I have several, absolutely.
Yeah, he's great. Terrific. All righty. So tell us why you wrote this. You wrote it in 2008, and you have a PDF file. For research purposes, please go to the PDF file.
It is going to be a chapter in this other book I'm working on that I'm calling Opening the Memory Hole. But basically, it deals with the idea that the six million number, which, as you know, apparently can never be changed. You'd think that if 6 million Jews were really killed during the so-called Holocaust, all of that, that along the way that Jews would be glad to hear, oh, not that many died and some got away and it's not 6 million, but you never hear that. The 6 million number apparently can never change. And you'd have to read my article to see a little more about it. But basically it is a Kabbalistic, which is Kabbalism is Jewish mysticism and magic. It's a Kabbalistic number. It can never change. Six is the number of a number of numerological completion, and six, and then times ten is 6 million, and again, a magical number. I don't know what else to say about it other than that. But if you want to see that article from me, you can either find it on GnosticLiberationFront.com, or you can just email me. I'll send you a link to that, or I'll send you a PDF of it.
Great.
It's kind of interesting.
Well, if you read Sanning's work, it's very in-depth work. He's got a lot of charts and figures and whatnot, but he talks about the dissolution of European Jews and talks about the people who immigrated. And then when you couple that with some other things that have been produced, you discover that there was a lot of immigration, particularly out of Poland, of young Jewish men who could not get jobs, just like in this country. Young men in this country, they aren't so much immigrating as they're joining the military because there are no jobs. So when there are no jobs, then you have to go where there are. And so a lot of Jews, young men, left Poland. We had great movement of Jews out of Germany after 1933. Many of them came to this country. A lot of them did go to Palestine. And if you look at the facts and figures in Sanning's book, there's just no way there could have been 6 million Jews that were killed in Europe, because there weren't that many there. And a lot of them, of course, went into Soviet Russia, and a lot of them went to Siberia and were worked to death. Okay, so when you're talking about, it's the same thing with the Katyn Forest. You know, blame the Germans for everything, but then when you look and find out the facts, just as they did with the the 20,000 Poles that were killed in the forest, they blamed Germany for years for that, even brought it up during the Nuremberg trials. Come to find out it was the Russians, the Soviets, that did that.
Yes, finally the truth came out about that the Soviets did it, not the Germans. And everything has to be, for some people, has to be blamed on the Germans. They have to say terrible things about the Germans, and certainly about the so-called National Socialist, the Nazi movement. They have to say something horrible about it, because if they look at the very truth about it, you find that many good things were happening. I've said, yes, there was a Holocaust. It was called World War II, and the most of the deaths were in Russia and China as a result of that war, because we turned Eastern Europe, we turned all of Russia and eventually Southeast Asia, we turned that over to the communist movement. The Roosevelt administration playing a key role in pulling that off.
All righty, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back, and this is our last segment. Be right back. Just a comment from the chat room. This is from, or no, it's an email from Mike. He said the Mossad probably hit Black in Pittsburgh on orders of Rahm Emanuel. And that is from our email. All righty, we do have another caller, Richard in Washington. Richard, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Great show. I'm going to play devil's advocate on Werner's proposition that, if we don't study history, we can't learn from it. And my premise is, could history also be a distraction? In our present, we have had the same situation happen in Iraq with Saddam Hussein, in Libya with Muammar Gaddafi, and I don't hear an outcry. I don't hear people getting totally upset about what's happening in the present. Maybe they're just busy distracting themselves with studying Germany.
Well, I think there's so many distractions. I don't think these people are studying Germany. I think they're watching Dancing with the Stars and some other drivel. What do you think, Dr. Rome?
Oh, I think that, yes, most of the American people are very, very ill-informed. We've had several generations now of so-called public schools, which are simply public indoctrination centers for the most part. They don't teach you any history. As a matter of fact, they teach you anything they can but that. So, yes, I think we're distracted, but people studying Germany in World War II are not, I don't think you find them so much among the distracted ones. And as we've said today, what was going on in Germany back in late 20s, early 30s, is not all that different from what's going on now. People were on the streets. They were hungry. They were, quote-unquote, homeless, all of that. And so same things are happening, very similar things, not the same things, but very similar things are happening today. So I appreciate you, the caller, wanting people not to be distracted, and we all want that. That's why we're on the air trying to do this.
Exactly. And of course, when you realize the similarities between what is going on now and what went on during World War II and make the comparisons, then I think that you're more apt to come to the right conclusions rather than the stuff that you get on the media, in the media.
The media does nothing but distract and delude, and people don't realize that what occurs on the mainline news has nothing to do with the producer, the director, or the newscasters. It has to do with sponsors. If sponsors don't want something covered on the news, it won't be, or it will be passed over very, very, very quickly, as you see that many issues are.
Right. All righty. We have run out of time. It's been lovely having you on the program. And thank you, Richard, for your phone call and your comments. And thanks to all the callers who have called in and contributed to the program today. And remember that we will not be broadcasting on Monday or Tuesday. We will have some very good rebroadcast, however. And I personally hope that everyone has a wonderful Christmas. And again, Dr. Rome, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me on. You have a great holiday as well.
All righty. Thank you. Bye-bye. Talk to you on Wednesday.